This is FM 100.5 and 101.9. AM 1450, Rutherford County's place to talk. WGNS, Murfreesboro, your good neighbor station. Stand by, Murfreesboro. The WGNS Action Line continues a search for truth.
I know you're out there
Good morning to you. Here it is, the 2nd of August. Man, this year is moving quickly. We're going to have some fun today talking about lawns and gardens. We've had a little bit of rain here and there, sprinkling of it. Some places have had it, some haven't. I'm not sure we had any last night. I guess we may have had some somewhere. I'm not sure. Mitchell, did you have any rain at your place last night?
None that I could tell, no.
Okay.
We had a nice little lightning show and off on the horizon, but we didn't have any rain.
Yeah.
But did have the night before.
Yeah, and every bit helps.
Yeah, oh yeah. We're not going to turn any of it away.
No. As you have had over the past week, are people having success with their gardens right now, or is it all sort of being slowed down by the lack of rain?
Oh, I think folks that have, you know, made a concentrated effort to tend the garden and during the dry periods, if they supplied supplemental irrigation, then yeah, they've been successful. Folks have been producing just a variety of things, and will continue to do that as long as they stay diligent with doing those, supplying those things that the garden needs. We haven't had to worry about it being warm enough, obviously, and we haven't had to worry about frost covering up the plants at night, so I guess we can, you know, be thankful for that. That's one thing we don't have to worry about. But, you know, tomatoes have done well. field peas, you know, squash and so on. You know, peppers, okra, things that like the hot weather. But, I mean, there have been some cases, I think, where folks have had problems just simply associated primarily with hot weather. It got so warm that, you know, plants wouldn't retain their blooms. And so they don't retain the blooms, so they don't produce fruit because there's nothing there to, you know, to be pollinated and produce that fruit. So, you know, that can happen sometimes too.
So everything at the farmer's market's going well then? I mean, there's plenty of vegetables there.
Yeah, there's a good supply.
And, of course, we mentioned that because tomorrow morning is the
farmer's
market.
Tomorrow morning, 7 o'clock, sure enough. It'll be there from 7 till noon on Tuesdays and Fridays.
All righty. So head over there to the Lane Agri Park on John Rice Boulevard, next to Paws, and just down from Sam's. 7 until noon tomorrow. I understand Mimi Kiesling is having a lecture going on at the same time, which is free, at the Outdoor Pavilion. Now, where is that? She said that's right across from it. How is that? Where is it in relation to? Is it that little gazebo across the driveway?
It's an open air, covered pavilion, open sided. It's where the butterfly garden is.
Ah, okay. Yep. Good morning. You're on WGNS with Mitchell Moat. How are you today?
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
I was just wondering, you usually talk about a local peach orchard around that usually about this time of year comes out. I just wondered, I can't remember the name of it. I wonder if y'all, you usually sell them around just probably the gas stations and things.
Gilliland, is that who?
I think maybe he's referring to Gilliland peaches.
Yes.
Gilliland.
Yeah, I think
it is about this time of year, then, isn't it?
Yeah, I haven't heard a thing.
Well, I saw him set up last month out on Las Casas Pike. I can't remember the exact location, but when I passed, it was like he had about sold out. But yeah, I have seen a Gilliland truck around.
Oh, all right. Oh, I've been looking for it. I just missed it, I guess.
Well, and you know, don't count them out. They may be back.
Yeah. Now, thank you for calling, by the way. Has the peach season been pretty good this year, or has it had a rough time also?
Well, I think everything's had a relatively rough time, but as far as, you know, have peaches been good this year, or has there been a good crop of peaches? You know, I haven't really heard anyone say one way or the other. I haven't I don't have any knowledge of that.
Mm-hmm. Did we have many blueberries? The blueberry season just seemed to have slipped quietly away.
Well, I know there were blueberries at the market. Mm-hmm. They had various vendors there selling blueberries. Blueberries were produced, but as to, you know, how many, I don't know.
Good morning. You're on WGNS with Mitchell Moat. How are you today?
Doing just fine. I was going to tell y'all where the peaches are today. We're just passing it at the Shell station on the corner of Church and Middle Tennessee Boulevard.
Okay.
From 8 to 1.
Okay, the Shell station on Church at Middle Tennessee Boulevard, going on until 1 o'clock today.
Yes, sir.
All righty. Thank you for calling.
That's good.
You're more than welcome. Have a blessed day.
You too. Bye-bye. So you can go get your peaches and then vote.
Peaches and vote and fill up with gas right there.
Yeah.
Well, you probably can't vote right there. But
no, I don't think so. But you can vote at your election place until 7.
Do vote, though. Yeah. Do vote.
Good morning. You're on WGNS with Mitchell Moat.
Yeah, I saw peaches for sale at that gas station across from Barbecue's.
Uh-huh.
There on Memorial. I don't know what it was, but it was once a week sometime. It was up on their marquee.
Oh, okay.
So I don't know who's selling where, but I did pass that up here on Memorial. Old Fort Parkway, whatever it is there.
I guess if you're in the market for a fresh peach, as long as it's a fresh peach, you don't really care who grew it.
Yeah.
Yep. Well, thank you. Thanks for calling.
Appreciate
all
that.
Right. Mm-hmm. Bye-bye. 893-1450. All these peach calls, suddenly a peach would be mighty good.
Well, it's kind of fun a craving on me, Bart. I wouldn't mind having a little peach juice drip down my chin.
Or maybe a good wedge of watermelon, too.
Well, and there have been some watermelons. Have had some good ones and some that were not so good. So that's the thing, you know. I guess there's an art to picking them, and I
haven't learned it, though.
Well, I don't know anybody that can pick a good one every time. Boy, sometimes I can and sometimes I can't. But then maybe it's because of what I've got to pick from. You know, if there's not a good one in the bunch, I don't guess you can pick a good one. But you don't know until you crack it open.
Maybe there's somebody out there who has the secret to picking the right watermelon. Where do you thump and what do you hear?
Yeah, there's more than one approach to that, so yeah. I don't know.
Good morning. You're on WGNS with Mitchell Moat.
Good morning.
Hi.
Good morning.
I was at you that was talking about the watermelon.
Mm-hmm.
They don't make them as big as they used to.
Well, you know, I've noticed at the grocery they're very small.
Yeah. And I was wondering what was going on with that. I'm going to hang up.
I think primarily it's just the varieties that people grow. Smaller ones are easier to handle, you know, easier to ship.
I can pick them up.
So, yeah.
Without any problem.
especially for folks that don't have large families, they don't, you know, probably need as much. And again, that's speculation. But I'd say it has more to do with shipping and handling and so on, you know, just transporting those things. It has a lot to do with it.
And they're $4.99 or something like that for a small melon. So I guess they can sell more small ones and make more money.
Oh, probably so. Yeah. I'm sure it's an economic thing.
Good morning. You're on WGNS with Mitchell Moat. How are you today?
I'm doing well.
Good.
I have a question. We are growing pumpkins for the first time, and the leaves look like they have some kind of fungus on them. So my husband gets online and looks, and he mixed skim milk and water. I don't know if that's the correct thing to do or not.
And then you put that
on the leaves.
Oh, you sprayed it on the leaves. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Skim milk and water?
Yeah.
Well, okay. Let us know how it works, because that's the first time I ever heard of that. So he looked it up. So what was the diagnosis?
It's some kind of fungus, and it attacks like, it's not like from the ground. It attacks like the leaves of like pumpkins and squash.
Yeah, those in the cucurbit family. So did you have like cloudy appearance on the leaves?
Yes.
Yeah, so it's a mildew is what it is. It's probably either a powdery or a downy mildew. I have no idea whether that'll be of any benefit to you or not.
I'll have to call back and let you know.
Yeah, but I tell you what, though, you might want to have something on standby just in case, because the mildews can be fairly devastating on those crops. And, you know, there are a number of fungicides that can be effective against protecting the those crops from that. You know, sulfur is a fungicide that can be beneficial against some of the mildews. And there are other synthetic fungicides as well. Chlorothalonil is one. Quadris is another one. Especially if you're looking at large scale, you might want to look at one of those. But sulfur is something that is effective against mildew on those cucurbits. Thing about it is, you're not going to, those leaves that are infected, they're not going to look any better than they look today. You're not going to cure them, but what you're doing with the fungicide is you're protecting foliage that has not been affected yet. And if left unchecked, it'll just continue to spread, and it will involve more of the foliage, and it'll get to the point that doesn't have enough good green tissue left to manufacture or to capture sunlight and manufacture energy and so on. So the plant will just really go into decline. So you might want to consider you know, some other options there, but it may work. I don't know. Again, that's a new one for me.
Thank you.
There's no telling.
Well, but I tell you, if it does or if it doesn't, I wish you would let us know.
Yeah, do let us know, because as you were talking, I looked it up. I did a search on the internet, and it talks. A lot of people are talking about this, and it says it does not matter whether you use skim milk or whole milk. But it's about 40%. You spray 40% milk, 60% water on the area. And it says healthy pumpkins showing no sign of powdery mildew on their leaves. It does not matter if the milk you use is whole or skim. And it says it works. There's a whole lot of sources here that talk about powdery mildew, pumpkins, squash, and gourds. And it talks about this mix. So I think your husband may have come on something.
Well.
Give him an attaboy. Pat him on the back and say, way to go.
Yeah, he's so proud of his pumpkins. I hate for something like that to happen to him. So.
Well, it's definitely written up. I don't know whether the internet can make it valid or not, but there are quite a few sources that talk about that.
One thing, you know, just you can certainly tell if it's working or not, because if it's not, it's going to continue to spread pretty quickly. So just, you know, it's one of those things that you want to look at on a daily basis, just to see if you have halted the spread. So you'll know right soon whether it's going to work for you.
Good luck to
you. Okay.
All righty. Thanks for calling.
Okay, thanks.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye. Now, instead of powdery milk, instead of the milk and water, 40% milk, 60% water sprayed on the leaves, instead of that, is there something that's more scientific that probably would work?
Yes. As I mentioned, there are a number of fungicides that are very effective, and I don't know what the properties are of that mixture that are going to that are going to be effective. Again, I have no knowledge of it. So,
and that's better than the anti-powdery mildew dance.
You know, I think that's probably like a rain dance. The success of either one of those has a lot to do with timing.
That's right. 893-1450 is our number. Mitchell Moats with us this morning. We're talking lawns and gardens.
There's just a plethora of home remedies, and this would, I guess, fall into the under that heading. And some folks will report that they have had success using things like that, and others will report that they haven't. So, and the internet is a great source of information. There's obviously no question about that. But it's also it's hard to verify sometimes whether that information, you know, the accuracy or the validity of it. So if you know, if you can look at information from you know, valid sources, or if you can confirm that they're valid, for instance, information published by universities and so on, you know, it tends to be replicatable. It comes from the research is done and following a protocol, so that there will be measurable results, and generally they have to be replicatable, meaning that if you can do it over here, then we can do it over here, and somebody else over there can do the same thing and expect similar results. So that's, you know, that's a good source of information, those university reports.
I'm impressed, I'll have to say this, with the number of different sources who are using this as a suggested method. Yep. I mean, I'm just looking, and they're on and on and on from Vermont all through the South. Maybe something, it must be something new. I'm not sure. No way to tell on that.
Yeah, it's hard to say if it's a, you know, a recent innovation or an older one. I would imagine it's probably an old one. Mm-hmm. But again, I'm just speculating. I don't know.
Have you tried that yourself? If you have, we'd like to hear from you. Did it work for you? If you have the powdery mildew, whether it's on pumpkins, zucchini, whatever it might be, did the mix of milk and water, 40% milk, 60% water, and it says it does not have to be skim milk, it could be whole milk, either one, did that work for you? 893-1450 is our number, 893-1450. We're talking lawns and gardens this morning. And Mitchell Moat is with us. Our phone number is 893-1450. We're going to pause and check on the latest traffic and weather. We'll be back and take some more of your calls. 893-1450. That's an interesting thing. A mix of milk and water sprayed on the leaves to get rid of powdery mildew.
Walks back into my life like it's all gonna be alright. Don't you know how much it hurts when we don't talk, when we don't touch, when it doesn't feel like we're even in love? It matters to me.
Sometimes strange things can happen.
Coast to coast, all night, every night.
There's really no reason to be afraid.
On WTNS, AM, FM, online.
Board of Murfreesboro thanks the men and women of the U.S. military for their service and dedication to defending our country. Board of Murfreesboro is proud to offer special incentives to our servicemen and women on a daily basis. Board of Murfreesboro appreciates those who serve in the U.S. Army, Navy, Marines, Coast Guard, and Air Force. Visit Board of Murfreesboro on Broad at Northfield today, online at fordofmurfreesboro.com.
Hi, this is David Lee, General Manager at Ford of Murfreesboro, and I invite you to come down and see our full selection of Fords, and we'll give you the best deal in town.
Hello, this is Lisa Halliburton from Bell Jewelers. At Bell Jewelers, we buy directly from our diamond source in Israel. Our long-standing relationship with our diamond cutter means we get to select from the best offerings first and pass the savings on to our customers. There's nothing like the sparkle of a Bell Jewelers diamond. Stop in soon and see for yourself.
Visit Bell Jewelers on Broad, across from Toots.
Quality automotive repair service and repair at honest, fair prices. Roberts Discount Auto Repair on Broad Street, across from Ford of Murfreesboro. Call 896-1407. We care, and we're here to help.
Good morning. We've got a bit of congestion already. Old Fort Parkway at Bridge, Old Fort Parkway at Chapin Place, Old Fort Parkway at Kaysen Lane, I-24 at 96, seeing some congestion building this morning. Also, we've got a bit of congestion on I-24 at the I-24 westbound junction there with Bell Road, and I-24 at the junction with I-40 West. Stop by Bradford Flooring and Paint Center at 1999 Nolensville Pike. Ask about the free tickets to the race at the fairgrounds this summer. Call Bradford Flooring at 251-5384. I'm Randy O'Brien with traffic on WGNS.
Thank you, Randy. What about that Murfreesboro weather? Brought to you by First National Bank of Murfreesboro.
We have spotty showers and thunderstorms in the forecast for today. Otherwise, sunshine. Another warm day with our highs climbing into the upper 90s. I'm WGNS staff meteorologist Mandy Thaluber. Right now, 77.
I'm Steve Smith at First National Bank, Murfreesboro. Our people are different from others. We give the personal service. We're here to answer the telephone. We're just personal hometown banking at First National Bank, Murfreesboro, member FDIC.
We're WGNS, FM 100.5, FM 101.9, and AM 1450. Worldwide at WGNSradio.com.
Hey, we're back again. 893-1450. We're here to talk about peaches and tomatoes, powdery mildew, maybe a snake or two.
Well, we could talk about snakes. I'd prefer not to.
Lizards.
Yeah, well, now lizards have sure been plentiful.
Have they really?
Like, yeah, around my house they have.
Little ones?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
Little blue-tailed lizards and little brown, call them fence lizards.
Mm-hmm. What do they do that is really productive?
Well, make more lizards, I guess.
Oh, okay.
But, I mean, they eat insects. That's a common part of their diet, or a large part of their diet, is they do eat insects.
Maybe I haven't been in the right place, or maybe I have been in the right place. I haven't had a real big problem this year with mosquitoes.
Well, you know, in dry weather, you don't have near as many mosquitoes.
Oh, okay.
So I had one, let's see, I guess it was last night or night before I was out, well, both nights working in the guard, so, and had one or two buzz me. But if I've had a mosquito bite this year, I can't recall it.
So it's not that big of a problem because of the lack of water.
Yeah, that has a lot to do with it.
Okay.
That's,
so if somebody put up a bat box this year, they're probably patting themselves on the back and saying, man, this really works.
Well,
might
yeah,
be something else.
That, you know, well, let's try it in a wet year, too. I mean, and it will help, obviously.
Yeah.
It will. But yes, when conditions work, you know, in your favor, that improves success a lot of times. Kind of like doing the rain dance right before the rain starts.
That's
know,
right.
Makes you look good.
It's not a bad idea, though, to put the bat.
Oh, it's not. I mean, you folks talk about wanting to use natural pest control.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Using those predator creatures like that, bats and martens and so on, that's a very good way to do it. And back to the powdery mildew issue and using home remedies, the milk and the water combination and so on. Now, to say again, it's not going to cure tissue that's already infected with that fungal disease. What it does, let me back up. Since it's milk and water, I have no idea about whether it works or not. It may cure it, I don't know. But if it does, it's the first thing to come along that would actually cure it. What it will do, though, is protect that clean tissue that has that, like leaves that have not been infected yet, fruit that hasn't been infected. So, you know, if somebody wants to try it, by all means do it. I don't think it's going to hurt anything at all.
Mm-hmm.
And it may be the answer you've been looking for. But it's always better to prevent problems than it is try to cure problems. So if you start applying, you know, disease control materials, whatever they are, before the disease shows up, then it's going to be better. You're going to have better success regardless of what it is you're using, whether it's a you know, natural product, synthetic product. So does that mean you just go out and you start spraying stuff all year round? Well, no. You do it when conditions are present, or just before the conditions are forecast to be present, that will favor disease development. You know, in real dry weather, you don't have a lot of disease pressure compared to damp weather, because the majority of diseases are caused by fungi, and those organisms do, most of them need a fair amount of moisture in order to thrive, in order to live. So during dry spells, you don't really have a good environment for them, and thank goodness you don't, because if you had, you know, disease attacking an already weakened plant, it weakened the drought, that makes it even doubly worse. Now, powdery mildew is one of those exceptions, and it will thrive in dry weather. So that is,
and seems
that is
to be doing that.
It's doing well. Yeah, she's had it on her cucumbers. I noticed it on squash, both the yellow squash and white squash in my garden. And so I went in and treated it. Just found just a couple of leaves are starting to show symptoms. So thus far, I have, you know, kept it at bay. It has not spread and infected the rest of the crop yet. So you know, preventative actions tend to be the most successful.
We are in August now. This is the 2nd of August.
Yeah, I've been here for 2 days.
And every time we get to this time of the year, I remind myself it's time to start thinking about redoing your lawn. And then I think, well, maybe we're a few weeks earlier. Maybe just a little bit earlier. I'll put it off.
It's time to start thinking about it, though.
And then it slips away.
Yeah. When is the time? Well, it depends on what kind of lawn you're
green.
Excuse me, that you want to make.
I want a green lawn with no weeds.
For cool, Bart, you asked for a lot. you know what? I think folks that have weeds today are thankful they
bought. That's right. It's green. Maybe
green. In lawn care, green is good. And if it weren't for crabgrass and Dallas grass, you know, some people wouldn't have anything green in their lawns. this I think this summer and in the summer of 2007, it may convince some people that, you know, Bermuda grass is not that bad.
Mm-hmm.
I ought to think about Bermuda grass, because that grass has tolerated this much better than anything else. But back to your original question, when's the time to do it? For cool season lawns, that's your tall fescue, tall fescue bluegrass mixtures, fall is the time. Yeah, okay. Late summer or fall. Because actually fall doesn't begin until September 20th, 21st, 22nd, right along in there.
So we're in late summer now.
We're kind of midsummer.
Midsummer?
Yeah,
okay.
Midsummer. So, you know, late August, September. And it depends on what you have to do is when you're going to start. And if you want to do a total renovation where you kill the existing growth, then you want to start 2 or 3 weeks prior to your projected planting date. So the projected or the recommended planting dates for those cool season grasses is September to the early part of October. If your target date is, say, I want to plant 15th of September, I want to plant tall fescue in my lawn. Mm-hmm. All right, then you got to determine, well, what do I need to do prior to that? So you plan backwards to know when to start. Mm-hmm. So if you want to go in there and just kill everything that's there, well, depending on how you go about doing that, that'll determine how you need to start. If you want to use a product such as glyphosate-containing products, Roundup, kills, all things like that, you want to start a couple weeks ahead of time, you know, prior to your planting date, because give it time to work and to kill the existing plants out there. You know what kind of soil preparation work you're going to do? Are you going to totally till the soil? So that's going to take time to do that. You know, you have to rent equipment. You have to hire somebody to come and do that for you. And then, in an existing lawn, or especially an older lawn, you'll have debris to pull up, because you'll get in some tree roots and things like that you'll have to remove when you go through that tilling process. It may be that you need to fill in some low places or to level the lawn as it has settled and so on over time. Maybe it wasn't level to start with. That would be an appropriate time to do that while you're going through that major renovation. If you're just wanting to improve an existing stand, thicken it up, well, you don't have to necessarily go to that much into that much detail. Just maybe a good core aeration, followed by a broadcast of seed, and then dragging the seed down with a drag mat or rolling it just to help improve seed-to-soil contact could be all that you need to do. So, it just depends. Our August brown bag program will address that. That's the topic.
Do you have a brown bag today?
No. Okay. It'll be the fourth Thursday.
I didn't think there was one today.
Yeah, no, it'll be the fourth Thursday at 11:30 there at the Lane Agri Park auditorium, and that's what it's going to be, fall preparation for fall lawn care.
Okay, and, so that's going to be covered this month, Thursday.
Yeah,
okay,
that's what we're going to do. And now, if it's let's say that you are one of those folks that has, and I don't know how many, I've talked to a lot of people in the last few weeks that have said, you know, I can't irrigate this tall fescue. It's I can't keep it alive during the summer. I think I want to go with Bermuda grass.
And Bermuda is what a lot of people find successful.
Well, Bermuda is a hot weather grass. Mm-hmm. Okay, Bermuda grass, soja grass, centipede grass, those are hot season grasses. So it has to be warm. It has to be. They love the 90s. That's when they really thrive. Now they've got to have water, but they are good users of water, and if during a dry spell, if they don't get adequate water, they'll go dormant. But generally, they're going to come back again as soon as it rains. I mean, I saw brown at home. I had brown Bermuda grass back in June because we didn't have any rain on it. In Rockville, in some places, the ground is thin, so that ground dries out faster, and that grass will go dormant faster. But after the first couple of good rains in July, man, it's green and thick again. So, you know, it survives the heat very well. So folks are, you know, considering replacing their tall fescue with something like Bermuda grass. Mm-hmm. Well, so is now the time you want to sow Bermuda grass? Well, I think you're a little bit late for that. You know, if you want to lay Bermuda grass sod or zoysia or whatever the case may be, warm season, you know, it's not too late for that. But from seed, it's slow to come up from seed. It's slower to establish from seed than, say, tall fescue is, or ryegrass, something like that. So if I were gonna sow a large area of Bermuda grass, and so it means I'm doing it from seed, then I would look at doing that, say, you know, mid-May through June.
Let me ask you this.
That's when I would think about doing
it. If you're having problem with your grass growing properly and you have a lot of weeds, is this a soil condition? And if it is
sometimes
a soil, should you check that first?
Yeah, and that's one of the steps. That's, you know, if you've never had success at it, soil pH can influence the way the crop responds. In this case, the crop is turf grass, because it influences nutrient availability. So if pH is wrong, it can certainly improve. The growing condition can be improved by correcting the pH. But I will say that most turf grasses do have a fairly wide range they'll grow in. Getting the pH right where it needs to be and so on is a plus. But it's unless things are really, really messed up, you ought to be able to get some growth. You should be able to get some growth.
Okay, so be good to check the soil.
Have a soil test done, absolutely. And if you find out, okay, I don't need to adjust it, I don't need to add lime, then what it will do, it'll give you a program to follow. It'll have a high maintenance program, a low maintenance program, and a medium maintenance program. Medium, high, and low refers to level of quality that you desire in the lawn.
Now, if you're
a fertilization schedule, you know, and what to apply and when to apply it, how much to apply, et cetera.
If you're going to put down, sod,
yep.
the squares that are already together, obviously it's going to use the soil. So would you still want to do a soil test?
Sure. And you still need to do some preparation on the ground. You don't just go out and throw the stuff down. You can see places where that's happened, and you can see failures because of that. You can lay sod well or you can lay sod poorly. And to do a good job laying sod, at some point you have to get down on your hands and knees, I think, to do a really good job as far as fitting those pieces together. But soil preparation is important there. Take away existing cover because you don't want that competition.
Mm-hmm.
Prepare the ground for laying sod much the same as you'd prepare the ground for planting seed. The big difference is, number one, probably costs more to put sod down because you're putting down an existing lawn. You have an instant lawn.
Mm-hmm.
But you've also got to supply water to encourage those roots to grow down into the soil because they don't have a lot of roots there. You know, the sod, the way it's cut today, some of the technologies that have developed in sod production, they can cut a very, very thin layer of soil, and that's good because, you're not hauling the field away every time you take a piece of sod out. But there's not a lot there, not a lot of reserves, so you want it to go ahead and root really quickly. And you've got to, do the things it needs, supply the proper nutrients or the adequate amount of nutrients and supply the moisture to let it do that.
And I think we need to tell people also, there's nothing better than seeing, touching, walking on, and seeing what these different grasses look like.
If you want to know what centipede grass looks like, I got centipede grass.
Okay.
If you want to know what Bermuda grass looks like, and I suppose most people know that, but if you want to know what common versus hybrid Bermuda grass looks like, I can show you that. We've got
you have it right
there
at the Ag Center.
Got some out
there. I mean,
there.
Big enough to walk on.
Yeah, they're 50. They're 50 square foot blocks. They're 5x10 blocks.
Okay, and so if you're wondering, and your soil is just like everybody else's.
It's pretty sorry. Yeah, it's hard. it's out there and it's growing. Part of the old fence row was that fronted along the highway there, mm-hmm. when it was the Lane Farm, and I don't know how many pickup truck loads of. Roots and so on that we hauled out of there after they'd gone through and cleaned all that fence right before we put those plots in. We worked on it to try to improve that soil to an extent. Did a lot of regular core aeration to it and have top dressed it with compost, composted poultry litter and so on, mm-hmm. to try to improve organic matter content. It gets dry real fast. The ground gets hard. It's out in the full sun, so it's not a very forgiving environment.
So tomorrow when you go over to the farmer's market,
yeah.
you can take a look. This is out in front of
it
of
is.
Your
it's
office,
it's out in
sir.
Front of the office between it's in between the parking lot and the John Rice Boulevard.
Okay. 893-1450, some things for you to think about this morning. 893-1450. We're gonna check on the weather. We'll be right back. And when we come back, do you have some suggestions? Let me ask you this. We've talked about using local honey to sort of reduce problems with hay fever and allergies and stuff like that. We're still having those problems this time of the year. 893-1450, did that work for you? And also, what's this about vinegar? Do you do vinegar and the honey? Have you tried that? Tell us what you do. How much honey, how much vinegar, what have you? Is there a certain kind of vinegar? 893-1450, we're waiting on your advice.
Would it help if I turned this sad song on?
We talk about your favorite teams each weekday afternoon and take you to the games. This is George Plaster. Join me 3 to 6 here on WGNS.
Heritage South Community Credit Union now has a new home, 839 West College Street near Jennings Tire.
This is Darlene Robinson, branch manager. I invite you to visit us soon and find out what your community's credit union is all about. We offer free debit cards and great checking, plus exceptional rates on loans and savings. You can join if you live, work, worship, or attend school in Rutherford, Bedford, or Marshall County.
Heritage South Community Credit Union, new offices at 839 West College Street near Jennings Tire. Federally insured by the NCUA.
We're visiting with Tina Fox at the Co-op Farm and Home Center on Middle Tennessee Boulevard, just off South Church.
Come visit us for all those gardening needs. We have everything you need to take care of the insects or disease on your plants. We have a wonderful gift selection. We have a great clothing department, wonderful pet and bird department. And of course, as always, we have the great farm store. So come visit us at 985 Middle Tennessee Boulevard.
Right now, head over to the Co-op Farm and Home Center on Middle Tennessee Boulevard, just off South Church.
We have spotty showers and thunderstorms in the forecast for today, otherwise sunshine. Another warm day with our highs climbing into the upper 90s. I'm WGNS staff meteorologist Mandy Thaluber. Right now, 77.
Hey, happy birthday to Gene Garrett. Gene Garrett won the birthday cake this morning from Junior's Foodland. Happy birthday, Gene. And Twana Jackson over on Kaysen Lane receives flowers from Ryan's Flowers and Gifts. As our WGNS Good Neighbor of the Day, Twana Jackson, the neighbor said she is a special person, always helping others. Twana Jackson, our Good Neighbor of the Day. The other day I was over at Bell Furniture, visiting with Perry Bell and Linda Ferris. Always enjoy going over there. Perry said, be sure and let people know that we only sell American-made products. He said that you need to be proud of America. You need to support American business. And he said, that's what we are doing. We only sell American products. And they have first-quality name-brand furniture every day for about half price at Bell Furniture. And you're saying, sure they do. How can they offer it for less than anyone else? Well, they do it several ways. First of all, Perry has learned that buying in large quantities saves money. So he buys his furniture in trailer truckload quantities. That includes the Jameson mattresses, the full set of Jameson mattresses, too. And they have the Marriott Jameson mattress, about half price. They also have beautiful and so comfortable sofas, sectionals. They have the theater seating, you know, for the media rooms. They have all of this and more, half price every day at Bell Furniture. So he buys in large quantities. Secondly, he keeps the overhead down by displaying it in the store. All the sofas are in one room together, and all the, you know, the sectionals are in one room together. All the recliners, they're all there together. It doesn't look like a decorator magazine. Some places you go into, it's gorgeous and looks like a magazine, but that costs a lot of bucks, which adds to the cost of the furniture. And then secondly, he keeps the overhead down by staff. It's just him and Linda Ferris right there at Bell Furniture. Half price every day. If you don't believe us, go by and check it out yourself. Why pay more? Bell Furniture, 1517 the New Nashville Highway, halfway between Murfreesboro and Smyrna. Bell Furniture.
The Braves, MTSU, local sports. Yeah, we got them. Your local sports connection is WGNS.
AM, FM, online.
The chapter or the verse?
Welcome
you
back.
You can't tell me it all ends in a slow ride in a hearse.
That's if you didn't take the the proper.
You didn't have enough natural honey and vinegar and so on. Yeah.
That's right. 893-1450 is our number.
I think it'll help sooner or later. You just try to prolong it.
Do you do that? Do you take the honey? Have you tried it?
Well, I eat honey, but just because I like it.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, and that's a good reason, too.
Yeah, that's one of the best reasons I can think of.
Yeah.
Because it's good.
893-1450. Do any of you take local honey and do you mix it with vinegar? And if you do, how much? 893-1450.
You know, you mentioned vinegar, Bart. And the caller earlier talked about the milk and the water as a disease control, the powdery mildew. Vinegar can be a weed killer, too.
How's that?
Well, I mean, it'll kill
weeds. Just spray it on
there,
straight?
Yep. Just
how long does it kill them?
How long does it kill them?
I mean, does it do it for a week or a month?
Well, I mean, it kills what's there. Now, if it's an annual weed, then that weed's dead forever. If it's a perennial weed, all it's going to do is kill the top.
You mean, it'll actually destroy them, some of them?
Yeah, annual weeds it will. Now, the thing is, it destroys grasses as well as broadleaf weeds, so it's not something you can go out here and say, I can spray the lawn with it. And it takes a fair amount to do it, but it'll say weeds growing in a driveway. You can go out and pour vinegar on them and kill them, or vinegar and salt mixed together.
I guess you have to determine which is the least expensive, the vinegar or something else.
And, it takes a fair amount, quite a bit of it to do that. But, I mean, it'll work.
So if you went
hot water, boiling hot water, it'll kill weeds. I read
boiling it?
It will. You think you pour it out on them. Now, how efficient is that?
A flamethrower will, too.
And actually, there are such things. They're flame weeders. They're designed to be used. You've got a little fuel tank and a torch attached to the tank with a hose. And, we used one at home when I was a kid. Clean fence rows on with it. It makes a fire, burn stuff. And flame weeding has been done for years and years. I read a little piece from this was from the 1600s. Somebody did a paper. I guess you called them papers in 1600. I don't know. But anyway, directions on how to prepare ground for sowing grass. And you use lots and lots of cauldrons of boiling hot water to, kill the unwanted vegetation and so on. So this is something we've been fighting for a long time. This is not a new thing. Weeds growing in grass areas or trying to establish and grow grass and so on. This has been going on a long time.
Well, over at the Stones River Battlefield, they will have controlled burns certain times of the year.
Especially on native grasses, on warm season grasses, controlled burning is... It's a viable tool. It helps.
What does that do?
Well, it helps remove thatch. Warm season grasses tend to develop thatch layer and get a lot of dead residue, dead plant residue and so on the ground. And so you go through and you rid the surface of the soil of some of that stuff. That buildup of material that gets thick enough, it will inhibit moisture absorption or percolation down in the ground and so on. And it can set up environments, say, for, heavier insect populations, especially those that like to, say, for instance, sod web worms. They love to live in a thatch layer right up near the surface of the ground in that thatch. Well, if you don't have a good thatch layer, then you don't have a good environment for sod web worms. So, it helps with a lot of things. In the wildlife management field, controlled burning is done a lot, both in certain stands of timber, in pine-type forest and so on. It's not done so much in hardwoods, but in pine-type forest, controlled burning is done to help keep down undergrowth and try to prevent big fires by burning up some of that dry fuel that is accumulated over time.
I was reading something which sort of ties in agriculturally. I was reading it this morning, and it was talking about Copper Hill, Tennessee, in southeast Tennessee, where they had so much copper.
Yeah.
And it was talking about how they came in and scalped the mountains to get to the copper and everything. And this was one of the only places, as the astronauts were up in outer space, they would look down and they would see green areas, and then there was this big area of brownish that they noticed.
Yeah.
And so they said as the people were trying to get the copper, it also destroyed the water in the area. And so to keep the soil in place, they brought in, I think from Japan, kudzu. And that was the purpose of bringing this. I don't know
happened. It didn't work very well either.
And then it said it spread throughout the Southeast.
It did. And kudzu is not a good soil stabilizer anyway, because.
Does Copper Hill still have the same problem?
Oh, I don't know. I don't think it's to the extent that it was. And I don't know if it was just the fact that they. The mining process, but didn't they smelt copper there also?
I think so.
And a lot of fumes from that smelting. This is way before they had these scrubbers and so on here on these exhausts now that clean that stuff out. It killed vegetation, you know, is where the wind carried it. I mean, and so you had trees, dead trees and so on around. That area hadn't been mined, but just the fumes and so on from those smelting operations did kill a lot of vegetation. And that's why you had not only the mining, but also the dead vegetation. You can see that from outer space.
Well, now, the kudzu covered phone poles,
kudzu
houses.
Grows over things, but the reason it's not a good soil stabilizer is you've got all that vine. Well, it's growing from a single root out here. And so a lot of that ground, you know, it takes roots to stabilize soil. Grass is a very good soil stabilizer because each plant has this large fibrous root system. A vining plant like that if you can trace that vine back to one root over here and it's got all that vegetation on it, well, between roots, okay, you've got this plant over here, this plant over here, you've got basically open ground, even though it's covered by that vegetation, but there's nothing to hold that soil in place. You know, there's nothing internally in there, like those roots going through it. So that's why kudzu is not a good soil stabilizer.
Okay, so when it was used in Japan, and I guess it still is, did it take over areas in Japan?
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know. When left unchecked, it grows very fast, very wild.
It does.
It's a nutritious plant, though. I mean, it has a lot of nutrients in it that certain grazing animals can benefit from.
So that's one of the few positive.
That's uses, a positive plus. Yeah, that's a positive thing. It does do that, and you know, goats and so on can certainly thrive on kudzu.
Yeah, yeah.
Not that you ought to go plant kudzu for your goats.
No,
you might get shot. I think it's illegal to do that.
Oh, is it? Did they make it illegal?
Well, it's one of those. Yeah, you don't go buy kudzu seed.
Thank goodness we don't seem to have it in this area. There's no kudzu in this area, is there?
In the county, yeah, there is.
There is some in the county.
There is. Just get down towards the northern part. What's the, they're off Weekly Lane, the park area down there. There's some kudzu in there, and in the
over towards Smyrna.
So mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep, in the northern end.
Okay, so folks who they're probably out there listening right now saying, "Well, my barn just got covered up by kudzu."
Well, it could be open today and then covered tomorrow, so be careful. It grows quick.
Absolutely. I tell you, we have had a ball talking about lawns and gardens this morning, and so a word to the wise, you need to be thinking right now about getting your lawn prepared for fall.
It's getting to be that time of the year, and thank goodness, you know, if you haven't had your fill of hot weather, I don't know that you're going to get it, because if this has been hot and dry plenty long enough, and I think most of us are ready for some milder temperatures and a little more normal rainfall pattern.
If you haven't had your fill for hot weather, you're in the wrong place.
Well, just stick around because it's going to be hot again the rest of this week, I think, and probably into next week, too.
Mitchell Mote visiting with us this morning from the Rutherford County Agricultural Extension Service. Again, don't forget, tomorrow is the farmer's market. That's right.
Yeah.
Tomorrow morning.
And tomorrow is going to be Janie Becker's last day there as she
goes home
to wait the birth of her daughter.
Ah, that's neat. So congratulations to you, Janie. And of course, tomorrow the farmer's market, 8 until noon at the Lane.
7 until noon.
Okay. And Mimi Kiesling's program.
I think hers is from 8 until noon.
Okay.
Yeah, I think
and that's in the outdoor.
It's in the outdoor
facility.
Classroom just right there across on the right side of the driveway as you enter the parking area.
Tomorrow at this time, we'll have the Gravel Road Gypsies with us. My words were cold.